Welcome to the Dare to Multiply podcast. On this podcast, we help passionate Jesus followers become courageous, obedient disciples who impact their communities for the kingdom of God. I'm your host, Cynthia Anderson, a disciple multiplication coach and trainer. I'm going to show you how to make and multiply disciples in your area. God's got great things ahead for you. Let's dare to multiply. How big is too big in a disciple-making group or a Discovery Bible Study group? How many people is the maximum you can have in that group or even in a house church? I'm going to be talking about that today. It's a great question, an important one as we look at disciple multiplication. So I will be back with that in just a moment.
Are you busy but not seeing the fruit you long for? Dissatisfied with your present level of impact on those around you? Are frustrated with traditional methods of discipleship that don't seem to be effective? If so, the Getting Started in Disciple Making Movements course may be just what you need. Inside the Getting Started program, you'll get access to a step-by-step proven approach to making and multiplying disciples. Not only will you receive 25 short and practical video teachings spread out over 6 modules, but you'll have a chance to connect with others for group coaching via our monthly Zoom calls. And even more importantly, you'll become part of a global community of like-minded people from all over the world who are passionately committed to following Jesus and impacting others around them. If you want to get unstuck and begin moving forward as a disciple who makes disciples, I encourage you to go to courses.dmmsfrontiermissions.com. and sign up for this powerful program today. And now to today's episode.
So what is the ideal size for a Discovery Bible Study or a disciple making group, or even for a house church? This is an important question and one that comes up often. So I wanted to take time in this episode to address this. And one of my students named Dan, who's working in Africa, had just asked this of me. And so I thought, you know what? There are a lot of other people who probably have this same question and are trying to figure out how big to let the group get before they start to multiply it. Well, one of the things that we have found as we've seen groups multiply around the world is that dividing groups is harder than launching new groups, right? So if you keep growing an existing group and then you try to tell those people that they shouldn't meet each other anymore and they divide, it can work and people have done it, but it's harder to do it that way. All right. So you want to avoid that kind of a scenario by having some sort of a guideline as to how big you let the group grow and what kind of people do you add to a Discovery Bible Study group that you've begun. One of the common mistakes, I would say, if I can use that word, though, you know, that's a bit of a strong word because I think we're all learners and we're all growing, we're all experimenting and we learn by doing. So if you're doing anything, it's not a mistake, right? You're trying, you're learning. As long as you're evaluating, you're gonna continue to move forward, right? But one of the things that I see that people struggle with is they have a more typical way of thinking that I'm going to go out and I'm going to share the gospel with these different people, and then I'm going to bring them all into one group. And we're going to form a new Discovery Bible Study with those who are interested in hearing about Jesus and learning more. And, you know, I'm not saying that can't work, but it often will be much slower than if you do what we call finding a person of peace. As we find in Luke chapter 10, Jesus sent his disciples out and he said, share the good news of Jesus, heal the sick, cast out demons, and proclaim the kingdom is here. And when you find the person of peace, when you find the person who your peace rests on them, stay with that person, eat their food, stay with them in their house, and stick with that person that you find. So it's this principle that we call the person of peace principle. We want to be looking, as we're sharing the gospel to different people, we want to be looking for these persons of peace, people who will receive you. You see in that passage, the offering of hospitality. They will receive your message, right? What you're sharing about. So they don't just like you, but they like what you're talking about when you're talking about Jesus. And they will call others to listen to that message. So they'll call friends, family. They're willing to invite other people. And that's not to say that you never disciple or follow up with someone who's not a person of peace or not willing to call others. But really, if you can find these key persons of peace who will call others to listen and you form a group around that person, you're going to see greater multiplication happen more rapidly. So you're looking for that person. When you find them, then you build the group, in a sense, around their oikos. They actually even become the leader of the group, so to speak. And you may be with them, but you're not necessarily leading the group. You're wanting them to lead the group. They're the ones calling people. They're the ones who are going to be, in a sense, a group leader after you establish that system of Discovery Bible Study, and then you may move on to other groups. So when you look at group size, to get back to that question, there's a couple of key things that you want to think about. The first is you don't want the group to get too big for people to be able to participate well. A lot of times when a group gets over 8, 9, 10 people, it's hard for everyone in the group to have time in your hour and a half or whatever you take for Discovery Bible Study to actually repeat the story, to discuss the story. You end up with just 3 or 4 key people who are kind of more bold or more knowledgeable or whatever, and they end up dominating the conversation. They're the ones who talk the most, and you don't get active participation from everyone in the group. The more participatory the group is, the more learning is going to take place, and thus the more transformation as scripture gets into people's hearts and minds and they start putting it into practice. So participation is kind of the rule of thumb. If you're starting to notice that people aren't participating because you're running out of time, that's a factor. A lot of people in some of my friends in Africa will lock their groups at 8 people. They don't let the group go over 8. And that's, again, for the participation. And so if there's more than 8, they start a new group. They just have that kind of as their fixed number. I don't have a fixed number, actually. I think, it's a little bit situational. But what I also think is really important is who do you add to a group and who do you not add to a group? So one of the things that we've seen in disciple making around the world is that groups that multiply across relational networks, right? Relational lines that are in place. And that's part of why they can multiply so rapidly, because you don't have to spend a lot of time getting to know each other and building trust. There's already some trust. There's already relationship that's been built because you're working through an existing relational network, right? That's already present. And so when you're thinking of starting a new group, the question I always ask is, does this person who I want to have added to this group that's already ongoing, do they already know the people in the group, right? If they are the uncle of one of the people in the group, or they're the best friend, or they're the boyfriend, or the auntie or something, they're already related to someone in the group, then I think it's, a lot better to just add them to that group because they already have trust and relationship. They're already part of that oikos. But if there's someone that's completely unrelated and they don't know anyone in that group yet, I would really look at, can I start a new group with that person and their oikos, their group, their friend circle, people they know, and can I start that group with them? And as we do that, then you might be, juggling several groups, but it's going to have more opportunity to multiply in their natural friend circles than if you bring them into an existing group. Now, that's not to say it's a rule or regulation, that you can't ever do that. I've done it before, but it does slow down the multiplication factor, and it does slow down because you have to spend quite a bit of more time building trust and relationship with the people in the group. Sometimes that's what you need to do, and I don't want anyone to feel like you can't ever do it. But as a kind of principle, look for, is this person a person of peace, and who do they know that they could invite And could a new group get started around them rather than adding them to a group of people they've never met before? If you can do that, then that's great. You know, start several first generation groups, kick one off, get the person of peace oriented, knowing what they're doing. And then maybe you don't have to go every time. You can just go and check in, make sure that they, you know, they're functioning well, and then move on to another group that you've started. So I hope that's helpful. 8 to 12 is kind of, you know, if it gets much over 12, one, it doesn't fit as easily in a house. And then, you know, you'll start thinking about, do I need to rent space or rent a hall? And that, you know, that's heading down the wrong track when it comes to disciple multiplication. They easily meet in, you know, in homes or a coffee shop or someplace that's that you don't have to pay money for, and that's easily accessible to people, and not renting a hall or having to go back into the church classroom or church building to have those meetings. So that's another thing to think about. Lastly, just to say, I had mentioned house church size, and I would just say again, you know, some people have big houses and you can have up to, you know, 30 people or 40 people in a house church. But I would again discourage that. I think that, you know, 10 to 12 is a good size for house church. Maybe up to 15. If you're having your house church in addition to your discovery studies, but a house church can also just be 5 or 6 people as well. And then as it starts to multiply, it doesn't have to be big. Sometimes people want a broader circle of relationships. And in order to do that, sometimes you can bring, you know, 3 or 4 discovery Bible study groups together in a larger meeting, that's 30 to 50 people once a month, or something, for fellowship and celebration and getting to know other people who are also doing this, something like that. And if you want to call that the house church, you can, however you want to do it in that way, but just be aware of these different group sizings and how they affect participation and learning. And definitely at the level of more intensive discipleship, you want the group to be small. At the level of, you know, fellowship and relationship, it can go a little bit bigger, but also be aware of, you know, not getting into that thing of we need a building to be able to meet. You want to be able to meet in common space to see the multiplication continue. So I hope that's helpful. Again, there's no rules about this. You know, there's just some principles that people have learned over the years around the world, and I hope those have been helpful to you. You've got more questions about it, feel free to write to me. And if you're enjoying this podcast, I would just encourage you, would you share it with somebody? Maybe you have a friend or somebody who's interested in discipleship and evangelism and multiplying disciples. Would you share this podcast with them? I would be so appreciative of that. We want to get the word out to lots more people. And if you're on YouTube, please like, you know, and follow this channel. If you're listening on a podcast, I just would so appreciate it if you would take just 2 or 3 minutes and review the podcast as well. That really helps people hear about it. So if you're able to do that, that'd be a huge help to me. Anyhow, I will be back in just a minute with the wrap up and an action step for you.
Imagine a world where passionate followers of Jesus come together to multiply, transforming lives beyond imagination. Instead of toiling with little fruit, what if God's abundance flowed beyond your wildest dreams? Picture those you've invested in sharing Jesus freely, creating a ripple effect of disciple-making. In her new book, The Multiplier's Mindset, Cynthia Anderson reveals how shifting mindsets can revolutionize disciple-making. When Cynthia and her colleagues experienced these mindset shifts, they saw enormous results, including the launching of 19 multiplying movements in Africa and Asia, transforming tens of thousands of lives. This book will help you discover hidden harvesters, see church members move from passivity to passion, and release the power of simplicity in multiplying disciples. Don't remain stuck. Learn to move toward greater fruitfulness. Visit multipliersmindset.com and get your copy of The Multiplier's Mindset today.
Okay, so here is your action step. I want you to think about oikos, the relational networks of the people that you're discipling. What relational networks do they have in their lives that disciple making can naturally spread through? Remember what I said, that disciple making movements often spread along existing relational lines. Okay, so who do they know already? Is there a relational network at work? Is there a relational network related to some kind of sport that they're involved in? Is there a family relational network nearby? And I know that sometimes with Western believers, they don't have as strong of family ties, but they may have stronger ties with people they exercise with or people in the neighborhood. Is there a network in the neighborhood of natural relationships that people have? Where are their relational networks? Do some thinking about that and then think about how could the gospel spread along those relational networks that are there. How could we start new groups through these relational networks as you challenge everyone in your group to be someone that's going to be starting a new group? You want everyone in the group to be learning how to start a group, thinking that this group is not going to be our only group forever. But out of this group, we're going to all be starting new groups. So where could they begin? What relational networks do you have so that they're starting to think about that? So that's my action step for you guys this week. Think about relational networks. Pray about it. Ask the Lord to show you how you can utilize the relational networks of the people that you're discipling to see more gospel spread taking place and many, many more disciples being made. God bless you guys, and we'll see you back in the next episode. Have a great week.
That's all we've got for this episode of the Dare to Multiply podcast. One thing that would really help both us and other new potential listeners is for you to rate this show and leave a comment in iTunes, on Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you tune in to listen. Also, make sure to link up with us at dmmsfrontiermissions.com/blog, on social media, and please just share this podcast with anyone you think might enjoy it. Until next time, remember, God's dreams for us are always bigger than we can imagine.